Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. New guy says our jeans are for expression. Their purpose is to express themselves. Oh, no, our jeans are artists. I'm following up on a private discussion we had with the Patreon Hangout, Subscribestar Hangout also, where James was asking me, why do you use the word jeans for? You know, sometimes it does seem like a shortcut. It seems like a scientifically messy term. Gene for conservatism. We're almost sure that it's not a single gene. And so why call it a gene for conservatism? And I made a rebuttal to James back then that was saying, it's a better conception of genes to think of genes like this rather than think of genes as little segments of DNA. And that is all from Richard Dawkins, The Selfish Gene. So today I'll explain this alongside also Brett Weinstein is bringing back on Twitter his call for a future of biology based on lineage selection. But as I answered to him, it is not as easy as said to be implementing a vision of humanity and of social phenomena as emerging from competition between lineages. And I'll explain why. DK Shadow says, genes are an abstract. Exactly. I think perhaps one of the most subversive things for evolutionary biology that was ever done is to literally call DNA the genes. Because I think that it would have been wise if we had known how it would turn out. It might have been better to keep the concept of genes on the theoretical side solely. Because you have to think of how evolutionary biology could be thought of before DNA was even known to be containing the genes. And the word genes existed. And the biologists were looking for units of inheritance, and they were seeing them through the phenotype. Mendel was mixing up plants and concluding, all right, there's something that leads the babies of this plant to all have this feature, whereas the baby of this other plant have a different feature here. And when I cross-combine them, when I cross-pollinate them, I obtain perhaps half of the feature, perhaps none of the feature. And that was genetic thinking before we knew DNA existed. That was genetic thinking before the DNA came to be defined as the gene. Dino Logovich says, so genes are not physical, they are the results. Well, it's just that you have to understand that there's two types of people who talk of two types of different genes. Genes are first and foremost an axiomatic conception in evolutionary theory. And that is true whether you're a DNA-based life form or something else. Whether you're on a different planet, you may have a different set of genes, and these genes may not work like the DNA ones. And then there's the genes of DNA. There's a second type of people, which are molecular biologists, and they talk of segments of DNA, specifically expressible segments of DNA, as genes. That is a separate thing. Now, most of the time, the genes are genes. Most of the time, the second type of people are talking about the exact same reality as the first. That is an additional confusion, which is that it's not just that these two concepts should have a separate name. It's that much of the time they overlap, and much of the sentences you can say using one concept rather than the other are valid. That is what's most confusing. But still, the concept of gene from an evolutionary theory standpoint is absolutely independent from whether it's going to be encoded in small chunks and lengths, encoded or not, expressed or not, what DNA or not, whatever. The idea of a gene is a unit that passes to the next generation through replication, and that is subject to selection. Dinuragovic says, oh God, this is worse than ancient Egyptian history and different names. I'm sure ancient Egyptian history is tougher. Before we get to the biology stuff, Lucas Gage says, John F. Kennedy wanted to make the American Zionist Council, which birthed AIPAC, register as a foreign agent. Here's a letter from traitor Donald Rumsfeld to Robert F. Kennedy warning him that it's a very bad move to piss off certain people. A few months later, his brother's head gets blown off live on national TV. Today is Day of Remembrance, and for me it is a day where I remember who truly owns our nations. And oh my God, I hadn't read this letter specifically. And you can see the reference here. The Honorable Robert F. Kennedy, the Attorney General of the United States. So that's a letter from Donald Rumsfeld. He says, Dear Mr. Kennedy, several thoughtful and valued constituents have expressed their concern to me over a report in the June 28th issue of the Chicago edition of the Wall Street Journal, which indicated that the determination by the Justice Department of the question of the registration of the American Zionist Council as an agent of the Israeli government will depend upon the risk of offending Jewish opinion in the United States. I love how he says several thoughtful and valued constituents. Does that echo something or does it not? Am I the only one to hear those words in an echo? Several thoughtful and, you know, extremely valued constituents. I would greatly appreciate your comments on this statement and also a report as to the policy of the Department of Justice will follow in determining this question. So, Lucas Gage was pointing out, a few months later, his brother's head gets blown off live on national TV. The assassination of John F. Kennedy. Wow. A takeover. The reason we have the other presidents we've been having, the cucked presidents, submitting the American military and American intelligence to the interest of a foreign power, Israel. The reason is this. This is the fundamental event of a direction that was taken by America, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, who just wasn't siding with them enough to their taste. And the Donald Rumsfeld of this world are exactly those who took over. They are those who were willing to cuck, and they are those who were willing to submit the force of America to another nation. Dino Rogovic says, so many enemies, but the Secret Service failed or succeeded, depending on your viewpoint. In my viewpoint, they totally succeeded. They totally succeeded. The American people failed. The American people failed. And so Remembrance Day type of commemoration on Twitter, including Elon Musk saying, for those who died for freedom. And I said, no one died for freedom. At best, they died for survival by crushing another human society that could have existed in their place. At worst, they died in the service of a manipulative government that lied to them to the profit of someone of their own nation. No one ever died for freedom. Especially not in the modern sense. Perhaps some family members at times have sacrificed their lives for the freedom of their family. But the entirety of the modern warfare for the last 150 years at least is not a fight for freedom. It's an organized crushing of civilizations that have not been cucking enough to us. And when I say us, it's not even us. It is most of the time them. T.S. Apostolos says the Revolutionary War, JF. Well, I said 150 years. So as someone was pointing out, in the, because there were lots of soldiers and pro-military people offended by my tweet, but it's been my position for so many years. Someone was pointing out, it's bad that you have to look back 160 years, because someone was mentioning the Civil War, American Civil War. It was like, so you have to look back 160 years to prove this guy wrong? That was a good one. That was a good one. If you have to look back 160 years to prove that I'm wrong, it's bad. It's really bad that you're there, you know, promoting the current state of the military and modern warfare, because none of the people who are alive on Earth today are subject to these old conceptions of wars and the reasons we were getting in war back then. So this guy was saying, so what does the Civil War fall under? And I said it falls under a Norton conception of slavery through corporate employment and welfare, crushing an alternative society to the profit of someone else in your nation. So exactly as I had said above, those are the true reasons you get to war these days, not to save freedom. And Aaron McIntyre has a beautiful question here to the Jerusalem Post. Look at how subversive the Post is. If America abandons Israel and the Jews, that is the end of America as we know it, according to American conservative talk show host Dennis Prager. America, American. And Aaron McIntyre asks the real question. What does America mean in this sentence? What does it mean? American conservative talk show host Dennis Prager, who happens to be in America, but is actually a member of the very group that we're questioning whether should be abandoned or not. So how is this sentence not reading according to Jewish conservative talk host Dennis Prager? And here Aaron McIntyre is highlighting the very subversion here. The subversion is to present Dennis Prager as one of us rather than one of them in a question of us versus them. Imagine if I read this, if America abandons Israel and the Jews, that is the end of America as we know it, according to Jewish talk show host Dennis Prager. Now suddenly this sentence changes from being an appeal to reason from among our midst, and it is actually a threatening sentence. So one of the Jews are telling me, it's going to be the end of your country if you abandon us. It's going to be the end of your country, the end of America as we know it. Wow. A massive threat once interpreted through the right lens. But this state of threat is what America has been under forever. And it doesn't stop until we stop it. It doesn't stop until we say, all right, go ahead. You know, empty America of all your wealth, of all your goods. You clearly don't like America taking a direction of its own. Okay, end to the alliance between America and Israel. You go on your side, we go on our side. We're going to do some commerce here and there when it's worth it. But you no more control the entirety of the American geopolitical action in the world. DK Shadow says, it's not hostage-like. It is a hostage situation. It is. And you had similar references by Eric Weinstein on Joe Rogan Experience. You know, the Jewish people is so brilliant. Having us in your nation is making you so much more wealthy. So much, brings so much advantage. It was like carpet salesman's level of extortion. And it's like, well, okay. I think we can afford living without this flow of money, whatever it is. I think we can live without it. If it means that we have to engage in a new war every 10 years, I think we'll do fine without it. And if that means, you know, farming our own vegetables in our garden, then good. Good for us. I don't mind living a little more poorer and even much more poorer. Much poorer. I do mind getting engaged on the geopolitical scene in a way that tarnishes the image of our peoples forever. That creates such hate that there is a legitimate, say, Muslim reaction and Middle Eastern reaction to what we're doing across the world. That they are kind of legitimate to say, hey, we're going to fight back, we're going to immigrate in those nations and make a lot of babies. It makes sense to me. That is a proper response to a hostile government. T.S. Apostolos says, holy wars have never truly left our world, though. The current one is just getting going. Oh, yeah. I mean, when I refer to... I find it amazing because the Ukraine thing, I didn't see it coming when we were, say, in 2010. I didn't know that the Ukraine front was something that the warmongers were looking at with salivation. But I knew then that the Middle Eastern interventions were very much controlled. And it's stunning to me how the Ukraine war just fell within my existing model. Like a totally new event to me. I had never thought about Ukraine. I had never seen it as a particular point of tension with Russia, between NATO and Russia. I never cared about Ukraine. But the whole thing happened, and it all fell in a mold that already existed in my head, which is there are Zionist interests in America. They control our geopolitical decisions and intelligence decisions, and they cause conflicts in ways that put us against nations that we don't even hate, that we shouldn't rationally want to hate. And it's because of their hate. It's because of these people hate Russia. These people hate the Muslims. These people hate Syria. And we're supposed to join in that hate. That is the cost of our alliance with them. Well, I'm not interested in maintaining this alliance. Lendold Guntram says, Putin has been warning the West in his own way about NATO expansionism and a new European security order for 20 years. Absolutely. Let's talk about lineage selection. Brett Weinstein was saying in a sarcastic manner, wouldn't it be weird if fundamental properties of biology continued to apply beyond the threshold of our willingness to track them? Facepalm. One day, evolutionary biology will make eye contact with lineage selection, and humans will start making a lot more sense, but it's a slow slog. He was saying this in response to racial information members of the same race relative to the species as a whole are related to one another. Coefficient of relation, or however they call it, 0.18 to 0.26, almost as closely as half siblings, 0.25. That is not far from the calculations I've presented many, many years ago, where someone had asked by super chat, if I make a baby with an African, how distant I am from this baby. And I had made the stunning mathematical calculation live. And the answer is, you're more related to a random European than your own child. That was stunning. But that's a little bit what these numbers are speaking for. They are saying, you know, the people around you in your race, within your ethnicity, are not so far from family from a relatedness perspective. So Brett Weinstein is here suggesting that there is a future for evolutionary biology in understanding better nations and races and groups and ethnicity from the perspective of lineage selection. Now, new guy says, wait, you've been plagiarized? No, I still have a standing accusation against Brett Weinstein for plagiarism, which he has not addressed. but no, I don't think that this case is plagiarism. He was retweeting someone else coming with his own numbers. And given that he credits the person who came up with these numbers, I wouldn't think that it stems from plagiarism this time. But the other time, I still believe there is plagiarism. And we have close to an admission by Brett that it happened. Because he told me in DM, well, I think you're publishing inaccurate statements. And I've indicated here on the show that inaccurate is not a word you use when you're not guilty. When you're not guilty, it's like, this is absolutely false. Oh my God, you're pouring lies over me. You don't come and say, oh, well, your statements are inaccurate. I just think you're an inaccurate guy. Okay, well, if it's all you got, okay, you plagiarized. That's what happened. Holy shit, how can this guy fucking go into the future? I would be so worried every day that I die and that I didn't get a chance to counter a false allegation against me, that I didn't get a chance to admit it, to say, oh yeah, you know what, it was accidental plagiarism, sorry about that, and here's the link. How can you go on in life not answering such an accusation that is beyond me? Anyways, going back to, so is there a future for lineage selection? Ariel Soares says, inaccurate means at least some of it is true. Exactly, and given that there's only one accusation standing, that accusation must be true. Not quite right. So I don't think that it's super easy to think of lineage selection, and I don't think we should think that there has to be more answers for biology in there. That is group versus group, or ancestry line versus ancestry line. And here's the reason why. Extending concepts of natural selection to a mathematical expression of multi-level kinship is easier said than done, Brett. The wider one extends, the least certain one can be that the iterations have been sufficient to be subjected to selection events intergenerationally. It's pretty easy to guess that a phenotypic feature between pairs of brothers has been subjected to enough cycles of selection because our ancestors must have had billions of brothers. it's harder to think of the Russian race as having won the territory of Russia in an evolutionary struggle against the sub-Saharan African race. There may just have been too few encounters between the two groups for any lineage-based conception of selection to make sense. Of course, I'm not saying this is your claim, but the contrast between the two examples illustrates the inherent difficulty of thinking of lineages as evolutionarily competing entities. There is a point at which we would overthink ourselves into a falsehood. Now, someone might say, well, isn't there a sense in which characteristic A, B, C of Russian people made them more fit for conquering the territory? But then we are back to gene selection. It made each individual more fit, so the lineage view doesn't bring any particular insight. The lineage future for biology that you foresee may never come, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's what I think about lineage selection. I still have gone through the whole Frank Salter book and some of his articles, and I don't see a satisfying case being made for differential selection having had happened in a way that is fundamentally different from what you could gather from individual selection. In other words, you can come with the word altruism and say, oh, look at how this group was altruistic and it helped this group dominate Russia. But it helped the individuals just as much. And therefore, there is never a point at which this group, lineage, or race or ethnic view of Salter, there's never a point at which it truly brings something separate and different. And I'm still not convinced. That was my conclusion on reviewing the Salter stuff. I still haven't seen a solid case being made for a single human behavior that requires this explanation. Now, it's very easy for the loose thinkers to go out there and say, oh, not engage on this question. And just take it for granted. Take it as a assumed reality that, A, humans are so different, like we need a different explanation. But that is the fallacy at the heart. Something different doesn't necessarily require a different explanation, because the difference may be superficial, but the mechanism that generated the difference may be the same. The same evolutionary mechanism have led to squirrels and dolphins. You don't need a separate squirrel theory and a dolphin theory. And I think that humanity falls well within those boundaries, that it's, yes, it's a different result, but in the same way, squirrels are a different result than dolphins. Angry Sicilian says, trying to listen whilst my noisy extra fat neighbor revs his cheap imitation Harley motorcycle. I need to move out into the country ASAP. Man, these boomers are intolerable. The very idea that motorcycles exist is a testament to the inappropriateness of the boomer lifestyle. I can't tell you how much I hate motorcycles. They express a search for hedonism and liberty that is fundamentally flawed. It's the very liberty, it's that liberty that our soldiers fought for. That liberty of driving a consumerist product, wasting your money on a consumerist product that gives you the illusion of liberty. Based Saxon says motorcycles are very fuel efficient. I will grant this. That is the only thing that I'm like, okay, well, there is a function. But you're going to lose the amount of money that you win on fuel. You're going to lose it in insurance because people kill themselves with this shit and they keep breaking them. It's just not a serious means of transportation. Silver Spider says, yeah, and forget about the winter. You know, the winter is a problem. Silver Spider says, yeah, JF, but we can see a squirrel scratch its nuts and conclude God exists, yet dolphins can't scratch their nuts. You don't know about this. Have you made documentaries on dolphins? I need a quote. I need a reference from a peer-reviewed article that dolphins cannot scratch their nuts. Blanket says, JF, do you put your books on eBay? A lot of people prefer eBay. Listen to me, you little troll. I don't know what the fuck you think you're doing here. I'm not gonna put the revolutionary phenotype on Boomer Bay. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, sometimes this whole idea that the public should have an input on this show, I'm questioning it. Because you guys are getting impolite. Fucking eBay. You want me to be on eBay? Thankfully, I have new fans, and so eventually I can change blankets for a more appropriate and sexy fan. This is a must read. Thank you, JF. Good reads. Well, we have a new reader of the Revolutionary Phenotype. Isn't that amazing? Seeing this beautiful book laying on people's couch. I love it. I love to see all of the pictures taken in all of the context. Fuck you, says JF. As a warning, eBay has very little protections on Boomer Bay. Well, I know. I'm not dealing with eBay. Blanket says, wow, JF, I was asking a genuine question. Please don't be mean, JF. I was kidding. I was kidding, Blankets. I was trying to be entertaining. I hope it gave you some emotions and maybe you thought I was for real and that's fun. So, jeans for. To me, whenever I use the term jeans for, and I've been using it quite a lot, talking about jeans for conservatism, and this is where James came, and in the private hangout, he said, is that accurate? Is that something you should stop doing because it throws people on the false impression and expectation that there is a gene or a handful of genes for conservatism, and it's not really that. That was the critique of James. And my answer is, yes, it's really that. If you understand how I use the word, as is the case in The Selfish Gene of Richard Dawkins. Dawkins was writing, this story illustrates a number of important points which came up in the previous chapter. It shows that it can be perfectly proper to speak of a gene for behavior so and so, even if we haven't the faintest idea of the chemical chain of embryonic causes leading to from gene to behavior. The chain of causes could even turn out to involve learning. For example, it could be that the uncapping gene exerts its effect by giving bees a taste for infected wax. This means they will find the eating of the wax caps covering disease victims rewarding, and will therefore tend to repeat it. Even if this is how the gene works, it is still truly a gene for uncapping. Provided that other things being equal, bees possessing the gene end up by uncapping, and bees not possessing the genes do not uncap. That is the spirit, and he gets into more detail into the revised version where there's an additional preface. And he gets into more detail into saying, no, no, the Gene 4 language is the perfect way to relate the audience to the actual structure of evolutionary theory, and I agree. The fact is that if there's a gene that makes you more likely to listen to your father, it's a gene for conservatism. If there's a gene that makes you more likely to go to church, then it's a gene for conservatism. If there's a gene that makes you more lazy on Sundays and you don't want to get out of your home, and therefore you're not going to the church, that's a gene against conservatism. And the reason it ties us to evolutionary theory in a proper way, the reason I'm not abandoning this term in face of the critique of James, is that it actually wraps evolutionary theory in the way that it should work. You should think of genes as being whatever cause observables that gives them the property of being subject to selection, because anything that's observable can lead to selection. Anything that you differ from your compatriots or from your competitors with, anything on which you differ can be subject to selection in a certain world. So that's what a gene is. It is something that can be inherited through replication and leads to a difference. Now, let's think of it from the, is it an inappropriate name from the number of DNA segments that participate to it? Well, suppose that conservatism is caused ultimately by 1,000 genes, 1,000 segments of DNA. Suppose that the relationship is complex such that there's 500 of these genes, you absolutely need them or you'll never be a conservative. Suppose then that there's 250 of these genes that give you just a slightly higher chance of being a conservative. And then there's 250 of these genes that give you a very strong likelihood of becoming a conservative, given that you have the 500 first. When I say gene for conservatism, you might as well say that I'm talking about the complex of DNA segments, all of them, as well as all of their causes. The ensemble of relationships between those genes existing, those genes continuing in the next generation, and those genes producing all sorts of effects in your brain, such as the very development of your brain, that's probably part of the 500 first. The establishment of connections in your prefrontal cortex, still probably part of the first 500, like absolutely necessary or you're totally retarded. So you can't be a conservative if you're retarded. Most of the time, I would say. Exceptions according to how we define conservative. But basically, you need a brain to start qualifying as having a political opinion. So the 500 first genes, they contain a lot. They contain probably everything that makes you human, everything that encodes your cranium, your brain, and it's probably more than 500 genes, ultimately. But they are all genes for conservatism, because if they're there, they lead to a likelihood of the observation of something in the next generation. That is why I stick to the words, and I think, in fact, it's one of the key ways in which to train people to think rather than think in terms of molecular biology, which is not the heart of my thinking, nor the heart of the thinking of Richard Dawkins. It's better to stay to that language, because with that language, you can ask, well, these 10,000 genes or these 500 genes, what's the selection pressure on them? What if one of them disappears? What happens to the 499 others? Now you can start talking about, as Dawkins laid it out, genes cooperating, genes getting together. If you lose one of these 500 genes, the 499 others are worth nothing. So there are recipes of genes. There are combinations of genes that only work in combo. They don't work in isolation. And we might as well call the whole thing a gene four, since you need the whole thing for the expression to happen. Shamrock says, do you think continuous interracial coupling will end in population decline as people that need things like bone marrow will have problems finding appropriate matches, or will CRISPR technology solve this issue? Whoa. My God, Ken Shamrock is jumping to conclusions here. First.
Oh my God.
Stop thinking that CRISPR technology is a fix for everything, okay? Read this book, consider the dangers, read my ordinal's letter. Here, I'm gonna give you the link to my ordinal's letter. Humanity is headed toward massive danger if CRISPR is the solution to everything. And I'm afraid there's too many people like Ken Shamrock here. Now, so let's put aside CRISPR. No, people don't get selected for not having a potential bone marrow partner in the case they break their back in a snowboard accident. Are you fucking kidding me, Ken? There's a million different things you can get selected for that are easier to implement on the genes than this. I mean, just don't do snowboard. There are people who won't do snowboarding. There are people who can evolve not to need a bone marrow transplant ever. It is not a big enough consideration in society whether someone will die from needing a bone marrow transplant. It is not a big enough consideration to induce any observable evolutionary effect. There are way too many ways in which the genes can find a workaround to needing bone marrow. And it's not frequent enough to need bone marrow. So no, the answer to what happens to civilization once people fall into race mixing is India. You know, it's everyone converging toward this brown gigamix kind of blend race, so much so that India is always the example that comes out when leftists want to show that the concept of race doesn't work. It's like, oh, Indians are black. They have black skin. Oh, Indians are Caucasian. They fall within the Caucasian category. Oh, Indians have Asian genetics. And it's like, yeah, basically, Brazil 2.0. That's what it is. It's that there is some point at which the mixing is so intense that basically every single racial statement you could say about the Indian race, there's nothing they don't have. They even have the tech experts who can work like the Asians, who can work into our big tech sector. I mean, they have low IQ, they have high IQ, they have government corruption, they have authoritarian families like the Muslims, they have everything. Spindly Opinion says they have a cast of people to deal to deal with shit. Yes, exactly. They have everything. It's fascinating. So that's what happens in race mixing. You just get a mixed race type of state with, and of course there are the extremes that remain very white, and extremes that remain very black, and they survive to the extent that they're not being genocided, you know. And in Brazil, I believe that that's also true. You have some people who still claim a strong European ancestry. So that's what will happen to our nations. Fuck You says, Blankets, I think that was one of the more influential books on Papa JF, and he read it quite young. Yes, The Selfish Gene, definitely a foundational book in my thinking. White women are the most dangerous group in the United States and abroad. Let's hear the case.
It's truly amazing to me how fast the narrative changes. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. White women are one of the most dangerous groups in the United States and abroad.
I can see in the way you speak that you don't think. See this facial expression right here?
The most dangerous groups in the United States and abroad. Women are one of the most dangerous groups in the United States and abroad.
You're not thinking. You're imitating the speech flow of white TikTok speakers, and you are imitating their speech inclinations in a way that you think makes you look like you are a woman explaining it to us, like you know better than us. This is nothing else than human imitation behavior applied to speech, applied to looking condescending. She thinks that by sounding condescending, she sounds informed.
It's truly amazing to me how fast the narrative changes. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. White women are one of...
You are rolling on your already written speech like a politician. Like a formatted, creative performer of the TikTok kind.
It's truly amazing to me how fast the narrative changes. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. White women are one of the most dangerous groups in the United States and abroad. At this point, we've pretty much all seen the video of the city bike incident between the black guy and the white woman. The black guy claimed that he bought the bike. The white woman claimed that she bought the bike. It was a tug of war match. But notice how white people were laying in wait for some little nugget of information that was going to absolve this white woman of taking accountability for.
You know why we're waiting for the information that will absolve the white woman? It's because it's the only possible consequence. It's the only possible ending of this. There is no ending in which the white woman is revealed to be a secret white supremacist who wanted to steal bikes from black people. It doesn't happen. She's presented the receipt. We were right to wait because the wait paid off.
Or the harm that she put these boys in. Whiteness is a cult. And they will always come to the defense of their cult members. This evidence.
Look at this statement from a functional perspective. It's functional. Like, if you are a black woman in America, why would... My question to you guys on the chat is, why wouldn't you want to deceive yourself with this model of the world? Look, white people will always defend themselves. White people will always stand together against us. I mean, technically, she is right. But it's because she had the receipt. That's what she doesn't understand, that if the nurse didn't have the receipt and say it was proven that she aggressively took the bike and that she must have known that it wasn't her bike, we wouldn't stand with the white woman. We would say, oh, here's a crazy criminal bike thief. But functionally, if she continues in life thinking, whenever there's a tug of war between whites and blacks, whites will always stand with white people. She's technically right. She's predictively right. She just doesn't understand the reason why. Beautiful. I love the functionality of biology.
Instead, people are now getting on here to push to say that this white woman is innocent. actually doesn't prove anything at all.
So she goes to claim that the receipt doesn't prove anything at all. Well, it proves ownership of the bike in that moment. It proves her being the first to access the payment slot. It proves the black guy not having paid for that bike and therefore trying to steal it.
But it does prove the lengths that some of y'all will go to protect white women. It's wild to me how people still see black people as one of the most violent groups, when actually the most violent among us has the inability to hold their community members accountable for the ways in which they harm other people. You know who you are.
You know who you are. Wow. South Dakota governor tells higher education board to remove mandates on preferred pronouns. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem issued a letter on May 25 to the governing board that oversees the 6 public universities in the state. In it, she lamented about the situation of higher education in the country and challenged the board to a series of actions to show the nation what higher quality education is supposed, quality higher education is supposed to look like. At the K-12 level, we are taking steps to improve our standards, blah, blah, blah. For those who choose to start attending a university after graduating, less than half are graduating. We must do better than that. I look forward to working with you all on ideas to improve our graduation rates. Professors have discarded reason and logic in favor of subjectivity and relativism. Higher education leaders have rejected universal truth and knowledge and replaced it with individual truth. Well, the first thing you want to do if you want to restore some sort of truth-seeking in society is to stop selecting people out for being attracted to truth. Like, here's a truth. There is higher representation of some groups in certain criminal categories. That's a truth that will get you fired from the university, or you may just never be employed ever if you believe in that truth. Yet, no one questions whether it's a truth. No one has a factual counter to it. So what do we have in the academia and in the employment sector in general? We have something that pushes away truth seekers. So is it so surprising that we end up with lies, that we end up with subjectivity, if we push out our truth seekers in that way? If the only place for a truth seeker is self-employed in this world. If you really believe in truth seeking above everything else, you're done everywhere. You're done in the university. John Drake says, never employed by a large company, that's for certain. Exactly. So either you go to the local restaurant or grocery store, or you are self-employed. Doubting Thomas says, JF, in your evolutionary definition of genes, are my genes necessarily local to my body? That is, can a gene, like a cultural gene, exist as a combination of both parts of my DNA as well as parts of my parents' DNA? It's kind of confusing where you use the term DNA here, because clearly you're talking about non-DNA genes. So let's assume away the end of your question here. Can genes be extracorporeal, basically? Do they have to be local to my body? Genes have to be local to only one thing, themselves. So a gene is something that replicates. It's a replicator that is subject to mutation and selection, and that has satisfactorily solved the tree problem presented in my book of the revolutionary phenotype. So a gene is all these things, but it's only that. I'm not sure what you mean, a gene not being local to my body. The gene in your parents is the gene that's inside of you also. It's a copy of it that's inside of you. They're both genes. And these two copies of those genes, those that are inside of you and those that are inside your parents, they may at times behave in ways that are serving to the other. Very often it will be the parents serving the gene copy in the child. So Richard Dawkins explains that ultimately it's the best thing that the genes in the parents can do, because their copy inside of you contains more hope for reproduction than the copy that's inside of them. So really, we have parent-child care, but we very rarely have child-parent care. Most of the time, in freely reproducing, freely ranging species and sexually reproductive species, we have parent-to-child care simply because the child has more of a reproductive career ahead of himself than the parent. Now, there are fascinating exceptions to this rule. First, there are child-to-parent care that are identified in a handful of species. And second, the ultimate form of child-to-parent care is the queen sterile worker system. What is an ant colony other than a bunch of children giving a lot of parental care to their parent? That is what it is. It's how it evolves also. So all in all, to say, when you're talking about a copy of the gene, Dawkins at times in The Selfish Gene has suggested talking of the gene as being the ensemble of copies of a given gene across the population. And I think that he didn't stick to it that much. There are places in The Selfish Gene where the gene definition seems to be much more pointy. But it's one way you can look at it. You can look at all of the copies of the gene in the world as forming a kind of geneplex. And that's one way to look at it. I don't like it. I don't like it that way. Because I understand that once a copy of the gene has been made, it's another life form. And although you may have interest at giving it parental care, you may not also. And it may be seen as a competing life form under certain circumstances. Under certain circumstances, animals eat their babies, you know? And so I don't like seeing all of the copies of a gene being all tied together through a sort of collective communistic vision. Dino Logovic says, what about jumping genes, JF? Well, jumping genes. You send me a link here. Jumping genes found to alter human colon genomes, offering insights into aging and tumorigenesis. Published in Nature, the research unveils the surprising activity of long interspersed L1, a type of jumping gene previously thought to be mostly dormant in human genomes. The study shows that L1 genes can become activated and disrupt genomic functions throughout an individual's lifetime, particularly in the colorectal epithelium. Well, I talked about L1 before. L1 was one of my big worries for the effect of the vaccine, of the mRNA COVID vaccine to the human genome, because L1 can take what's in the RNA form and import it back into DNA. So it can mess up your genome from your RNA content in the cell. So that's a worrying thing. You ask me, what about the what about L1, JF? What? L1 is an example of a selfish gene. It's a selfish gene that has selfish characteristics in that it creates a little machine that just makes many, many copies into the genome. It creates these repeatable sequences in the genome. And then, perhaps, if it does its job correctly, it eventually passes to the next generation. So it's one of these suprameiotic selfish genetic elements, as Robert Rivers would term them. They are selfish genetic elements that have found a strategy to make more than 50% copies of themselves through sex. The way is you pack the genome on one side, whether it's the male or the female that you're in, you pack it with a million copies of yourself. And this million copies is so small that it actually doesn't disrupt the organism that much. And you have found a way, instead of having two babies, each of which have half a chance of getting your copy, you have a million babies per generation, each of which will at least have 500,000 copies of you. How's that for reproductive success? Now, the cost limiting this evolutionary strategy for a selfish genetic element is that if it was any big and any complex, you would have an evolutionary punishment. Humans who carry this parasitic copy of the gene would die. They would spend too much energy maintaining this big DNA segment that serves nothing. But as long as L1 remains small, it survives among within us and in a suprameiotic manner, in a manner that it will keep consuming whatever extra space there is in DNA to make its ridiculous copies of two or three or a handful of DNA bases. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, for example, a non-local gene I'm thinking is if I have DNA segment A, I may have psychological condition X. If a parent has B DNA segment, which causes them to act a specific way towards me, then the combination of A plus B is the gene causing X. Yes, so you can have... Okay, so you're saying if the mix of genetic circumstances that leads to my behavior were to be found in my parents, could I say that my genes are in my parents? Well, and it all boils down to something I wanted to say in response to your first text, but that I'm going to say now. The word my implies existence of an individual, of an organism. And the right way to approach this is biology doesn't care about the I, the you, or the he, or the she. Biology just goes on from the perspective of biology, and that would be the extended phenotype of Richard Dawkins. From the perspective of biology, you're not a thing separate from your parents. And so the concept that is it my gene or is it my parents' genes? It's a gene, and it leads to a phenotype, and that phenotype is an extended phenotype as it happens. That's how I would say. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, hey, Jeff, would it ever be possible for humans to have sustainable asexual reproduction or cloning? Also, how many times would I be able to clone myself? Well, in principle, if you were able to make absolutely zero errors ever, then you could sustain a copy of yourself continuously in the physical world. But there is a limit to it. So first, if you do it for real, there's going to be copying errors. you're not going to even have a full archive of your genome because there will be errors on the very first read, and there might be errors in the consequent reads. So that is the first limitation, and you could decay with time. Even your storage, even your hard drive could decay in its archival of your genome. So the fact that we're advancing into the future with the laws of thermodynamics leading to our decay inevitably, and the decay of any storage media, is a first limitation. The second limitation is, suppose we put this aside, suppose you do find a way that is not perfect by physical standards, but so good that it can maintain you millions of years accurately. Then you face the problem that your organism is fit to the current world. It's not even fit to the current world. It's already just really fit for approximately the nebulous of about 100,000 years ago to a million years ago. That's what your genome is trying to optimize toward. How can I create a human being that would roughly survive roughly well in the space of the last million years, approximately? That is what your genome is doing. And if you were to, for any length of time, clone yourself, you may be surprised at just how fast the world changes into a world where yourself today is not the right thing going forward. With sexual selection, we get a privilege of our genes being reassorted on an every generation basis. That is an absolutely strong and so impactful privilege that we have. We get the chance for the best of us to survive going forward while getting rid of the worst of us. That's what sexual selection is. It's systematically half of our worst half is washed away by evolution. Our best half is going forward. And that's because out of all the children you will have, those that don't survive, those that don't succeed at being sexually selected, will not leave descent, and their gene assortment were probably the worst assortment. And those children that you have that succeed at being sexually selected had the best gene assortments. If you get rid of this, you will realize that it's not even in a million years that your series of clones will fail. It's probably in 100 years or in 200 years. That's just how fast sexual selection goes. I think that you will start being punished for who you are today in a few hundred years' times maximum. Because by the time, imagine 200 years passing, imagine the difference. Imagine what's fashionable then and what's best and what's viewed as superior. It's all going to change. Breaking Bread says, are you an evolutionist, JF? I am the father of the theory of phenotypic revolutions. Absolutely. I am an evolutionary thinker and biologist with a PhD. Guess what? I have a PhD. I rarely say it on this show because I don't like credentials. I have given up the idea of bragging about credentials. But since you ask, yes, I am a scientist. The mean IQs of various racial ethnic groups in the US from the ABCD study. So a new study that comes with massive data that just basically confirm what we already know. So nothing new here. Blacks in the USA, 83 IQ. White Mexican, 92. Native American, 90. Filipino, 102. Asian, Korean, Japanese 106, Chinese 110, Korean and Japanese 112. Now, you have to take into account that if you go in China, you're probably going to get a lower score, and that's because the Chinese who make it through the immigration system are more clever than the average Chinese. It's just higher IQ gives you more mobility and more social mobility. That's understandable. So that's why you end up having slightly overrepresented scores here. But generally, it's exactly what we would expect. So it's just one more set of data that comes, but with massive sample sizes, so unquestionable on this side at least. Breaking Bread says, oh, I'm in the wrong place. Peace, lol. Well, Breaking Bread, I've seen you around for a couple of months at least. Am I not correct? So you learned today that I'm a scientist, and your answer to this is, oh, I have to go, bye-bye. What brought you here, bro? Lendald Guntram says, are you new to the program? Yeah, he does seem very new to the program. I mean, yeah, I'm a scientist, but I don't understand why you would leave this show because I'm a scientist. It's the first time being a scientist is really a deal breaker for anyone in my life. There are people who would cancel you if you're not a scientist. They would say, well, you don't have the credentials, so I'm not interacting with you. But it's the first time I get canceled for being a scientist. That is fascinating to me. And John Drake says, you aren't in the wrong place, bruh. Yeah, exactly. But his name is Breaking Bread, so perhaps he's so religious that he cannot speak or hear from a scientist. But I would tell you, Breaking Bread, is there are plenty of religious people in this chat. And it's, yeah, be open to what science has to teach you. And other than this, reject what you don't like. Reject what you don't like. Linux Foo says, lol, JF wrote a book about the foibles of messing with evolution. Do you believe in evolution? Lol. Yeah, exactly. Nuance Bro says, the group that canceled Gavin Wax are apparently the real ones getting canceled. Yeah, there was a very weird argument by the Jan Miles Chungs of this world, who are so siding with the whole, this new Twitter nebulous, this Elon Musk nebulous, that they invert the thinking in their head so that now it's not Seth Dillon who fired someone who's the cancel culture. It's the guy who got fired who's doing cancel culture. Attacks on the Babylon Bee and Seth Dillon amount to nothing more than right-wing cancel culture. I even see people dredging up tweets of other Babylon Bee employees to try and cancel them. This is woke behavior. It's I can't follow this line of thinking. If there's anything that cancel culture is this whole definancialization, firing, unemployment for the IDs that you hold. And that is Babylon Bee that fired Gavin Wax. It is not cancel culture for people to say, hey, let's boycott Babylon Bee because they just canceled Gavin Wax. I mean, you can frame it as large as cancel culture viewed broadly, but then the Target boycott is cancel culture. The Bud Light boycott is cancel culture. If boycotting is cancel culture, then everything is cancel culture. Every single decision that you do to purchase something is canceling the 99 other companies that would want to sell you the very same thing. Frog Eyes says, what about a show like Breaking Bad But instead of Walter White, you have Dr. JF. And instead of methamphetamine, it deals with TRP and gene editing. The villain Gustavo runs a chain of fertility clinics. Yes, that would be awesome. I hope, yeah, yes, it's, I hope it happens. That there will be TRP movies and shows. I can tell you that there will be art that will be produced one day. World's first, and Alimer says, thanks for the show. Well, thank you so much for the support. As a reminder, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat or use Entropy like Sanson Cominem just did. He sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, yeah, but surely the best jeans are Wrangler, right? Only joking. God bless my friend. The best jeans are Wrangler. I don't even know what Wrangler means. Wrangler. Someone who controls and looks after animals, especially horses or cows on a ranch. A Wrangler is a person who watches over and is a temporary caretaker for people who are not currently sober, similar to a designated driver. The Wrangler corrals the non-sober people to make sure they do not cause harm. So who's wrangling tonight, boys? I guess since Henry got wrecked last time, he should be Wrangler and watch over us while we trip. Okay. And you're saying, since I'm coming in, do I understand correctly? You're saying that the best evolutionary strategy is to be the Wrangler guy? And to have your stable of drunk females, and they trust you. they trust you to care for them while they totally lose their mind on alcohol, and then you inseminate them while they're not conscious. Is that what you mean? Oh no, Big Tech Exodus says Wrangler is a brand of jeans, JF. Ah, okay, well, I overthought this thing. It seems I have over-researched. So, Sansom Cominum was merely trying to make a joke between the pronunciation of jeans versus jeans and the Wrangler jeans being the best. So, he was not referring to raping drunk females. Sorry. World's first battery tanker slated for 2026 sea trial. I can't believe we're going to carry batteries like this between various parts of the world to charge them. Can you believe this? They want to make a boat that will stack batteries, go to some nation where electricity is cheap, charge them, and then bring them back to another nation where electricity is too costly. I mean, you do whatever you have to do, bro. If it's viable economically, you can do it. But what stuns me is this going to be sensical from an environmental perspective? Because let's not forget, we're doing all this to stop burning a cup of fuel so that we can get to the post office. Does that make sense at all? Does that make sense? And who is going to... I wouldn't do this business. I wouldn't carry these batteries on the ocean with water. And then I have to be the one who charges them. And then... I mean, they're not going to keep their charge. I know batteries. They don't keep their charge. So how much static electricity are you going to release into the ocean and lose the energy of the battery? How is it possible that you even get to the country with higher cost and that somehow there's still energy left in your battery? I don't trust batteries. Riding the Tiger says that boat must be very valuable, prime target for pirates. Exactly. And we're not even talking about when things go wrong. You know, we've had many of these ships take fire, these shipping ships. Can you imagine when a whole ship of batteries just, batteries just explodes in fire? How much pollution are you going to get? No laughing matter, John Cleese holds the line against calls to cancel the scene in The Life of Brian. So it's the famous scene where somehow they predict the whole trans craziness, and this guy says, "I feel like a woman." And he gets told by the others, "Look, you can't be a woman. How are you going to get pregnant and everything?" So it's like a very old argument against trans. And he says, "I'm going to leave it in." I fully agree. It has to stay in. It's a record of what society was thinking at some point in the past. And anyways, you know, it's not even right wing because it's not even mocking the trans view. Connie Law, commencement speaker, claims that laws are white supremacy, attacks fascist police and military. Oh my God, she had her beret and calling for revolution and everything. Every year it gets worse. You know, this period of the year, we're in May now, it's the end of schools. And we get these graduation ceremonies, and we see that the new generation of students that come out of our universities are just worse than the last year. It never gets better. While Anheuser-Busch InBev weathers a consumer boycott of Bud Light over a promotion from a trans influencer, the fallout is hitting hundreds of independent, often family-owned distributors that sell and deliver Bud Light to stores, bars, and restaurants. I'm okay with this. When you associate with a business that is doing certain forms of promotions that people disagree with, it's okay that you pay the price. Just change your associations, sell other types of beer. It's all feasible. Lindsey Graham vows to undo the absurd bipartisan debt deal, calls it a disaster for defense. Wow, that is something I had not expected. I had expected that the deal would pass because there would be some people at the middle, some Republicans in name only, who would defend the extension of the debt ceiling. What I hadn't predicted is that the Republicans in name only are so Democrat that they find the deal underwhelming because they would want more foreign interventionism, more money poured over Ukraine, more money poured toward Israel. So at this point, we have Lindsey Graham from within the Republican Party standing so much for the warmongering that he's like, "No, this is not enough money. We need more." And that is so weird, given that the Republican Party under Trump was the party of, at least that was attracting an electorate that didn't want war. Lendald Guntram says, "Lindsey Graham is living dangerously. Russians issued an arrest warrant on his head." Yeah, because he was standing in front of Zelensky and saying, "It's the best money we've ever spent. Russians are dying." And wow, I was so disgusted by his attitude. Like, you know, this dirty pig just being out there and celebrating. Oh, it's the best money we've ever given. Let me tell you, with his gay phrasing and accent, I was like, this is so disgusting. This man is so disgusting. And yes, he's so disgusting that Russia issued an arrest warrant after him. Of course, it doesn't mean much because there is unlikely a situation in which he will be in a country where Russia can arrest him or has the agents to arrest him. But that is what it is. That, you know, warmongers never change. Climate cultists thought they had sabotaged another beautiful event, but the cameraman had a surprise for them. You will see a camera comes to clean up the climate activist. Oops, I'm going to lower this a little bit. So the camera comes in and kicks the guy right here. Okay, well, that is one way to get rid of the climate activist issue. Chinese developer, that would be our last news item. Chinese developers resorting to negative down payment practices in his attempt to reboot China's real estate property market bubble, which burst spectacularly in late 2021 when most housing developers blew up in the aftermath of Evergrande's historic bankruptcy. Blah, blah, blah. China's real estate agencies have been quietly resorting to some of the oldest tricks in the U.S. housing bubble book, such as marketing home buying with zero down payment or negative down payment so that consumers not only don't need to pay for down payment, but also can obtain funds for future renovation, according to media reports. Well, that is what happens when there's really no way to, in your society, to be successful enough to make money, to be ensured that you can pay a mortgage for 20, 30 years. So no one wants these mortgage, and everyone knows it's a scam and that you're not going to keep employment at a reasonable level that will allow you to make your payments. So now they have basically to give away their extra real estate to get people involved into these enormous mortgage payments that they won't be able to pay in the end. That is so sad. I think we should just go back to free market in the real estate sector, and that demands so many changes to society because there's so many things that go bad in the real estate market. There's the exploitative nature of the mortgage system. There's the problem of the stability of employment, which is not there anymore, so no one knows if they'll be able to pay the mortgage. There's the problem of the city and state and provincial red tape of all kind that imposes things on homeowners that make their life a big pain. There's the urban environment, overtaxing of property taxes. There's the regulations and local and environmental regulations that come to make the building of stuff for your families harder and harder. And the permit system and the professional review and inspection system. The layers of crap that are above the real estate market, at least in nations like the U.S. and Canada, it's impossible to clean this up from the ground up because it's at too many governmental levels that are there to wreck your life. Silver Spider says 30 years of working to pay a mortgage people used to build their own houses in a year. What a trade-off. Exactly. The trade-off wasn't good there, and we have to go back. But we'll never go back. I mean, the system will have to crumble before we get anything like that back. And ultimately, it's a case of the laws are coming and reducing more and more the actual space that we can live in, because the laws are making it so that lots of land cannot be developed, basically, for environmental reasons sometimes, for federal ownership reasons, or for just cities being assholes a reason. And so the land that you can actually be residentially living in a free way is reduced every year. And the population that's occupying those small areas is increasing every year. So it's a very sad state that's why people cannot have places to live. That's why we have houses costing so much. Because by buying the house, basically you buy yourself out of red tape trouble. By buying an existing house, you buy existing rights, basically, to be existing at this place. And you buy the rights that, you don't have to build and apply for a permit because it's already built. That is why we get a crazy market on the real estate, and I hope that it changes one day. Bye-bye. Thank you.